Testing 1, 2, 3. This is Janetta Johnson at Davidson College interviewing Brenda Tapia on February 19, 2001. I'm supposed to interview about your high school experience on integration and desegregation.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that you went to a predominantly black high school.
For the first 10 years of my formal education, I did. And then for the last 2 years, I was one of the first blacks to integrate North Mecklenburg High School here in North Mecklenburg County, in Huntersville, to be exact.
Okay. How was that experience?
That experience was traumatizing. And in many ways, I still to this day feel the effects of it. But if you, and you probably can't imagine as young as you are, being able to go to a school where everybody that you saw looked exactly like you, where you were treated like a human being, not as something exotic or something undesirable or just totally ignored. And especially for it to happen right after my sophomore year in high school, because my sophomore year in high school, I was very involved in all the extracurricular activities at the school. In fact, I was president of almost every organization except the student government, which you had to be a senior to be president. So I was vice president of the student government. I was a majorette in the band, and I belonged to all the other extracurricular activities at the school. Everyone knew me, teachers and students alike. And the 10th grade year was just the best year of my life. And then the following year, at the end of the 10th grade year, near the end of the 10th, being asked by teachers at my high school to volunteer to transfer, because they knew that fall they were going to close the 10th grade at the all-black high school that I went to, and they would have no choice. They would have to go. But juniors and seniors would have an option of going. So they really pushed a lot of us in the top of the junior class to go on and transfer, because they knew at that time that the following year, our senior year, the black school would be closed totally, so we wouldn't be able to graduate from the high school that we had started at. They thought it would be better for us if we went on and adjusted to the school by going our junior year. So there were actually 6 people from Torrance Lytle that went with me. None of them were from Davidson, so what that meant was that I would ride the bus every day, 13 miles, an all-black bus. I'd walk into North Mecklenburg, and because I was one of the only ones who was on a college-bound track, everybody else would go one way, and I would go another. Because my schedule was college-bound, it meant my lunch period also had me isolated. And so it was really a very trying experience in many ways. I don't think, at the time, it was just confusing and frightening. It's been with age and other experiences and growing awareness that it was actually a painful experience. Because like I said, I went from everybody knowing my name and being very popular and very involved to being almost invisible for the most part. North treated us very unfairly as blacks. As our athletes were able to transfer and immediately start playing football and basketball. I don't know if that meant, you know, if that had anything to do with the fact that North's athletic teams at that time were not doing that well. And with the addition of the guys from my school, they suddenly started winning. But we were told that you had to be at the school for a year before you could participate in any extracurricular activities. Yet I saw white students that I eventually discovered had just transferred to North from other places. They were immediately welcome to any organization or anything they wanted to participate in. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was a young man who was going to be president of his student. He had been elected president of his student body the spring before, and his father moved because of a job, and he was made co-president of our student government, but he hadn't been there a year. That courtesy was not extended to us. In classes, many times I was the only black student. I remember I had 2 classes out of 6 where I wasn't the only black. my U.S. history class, there was one other young man who had transferred with me from Torrance Lytle, and we were in the history class. And unfortunately, it was United States history, so we had to deal with the humiliation of getting to that one page in our U.S. history book that dealt with slavery, not even African American history, but slavery in the United States. Half the page is taken up with this picture of black folks in the cotton field smiling and picking cotton. And naturally the teacher turns and like, "Brenda, Tommy, why don't you tell us about black experience? Or why don't you tell us about slavery?" I had just finished reading Frederick Douglass's autobiography the summer before she asked that question. And so I started relating to her about slavery from what Frederick Douglass shared in his narrative. And I was interrupted by a North Mecklenburg student who happens to be a professor here at the college, who said, "Oh, Brenda, that was Northern abolitionist propaganda. Slaves were not treated cruelly at all. In fact, slaves were a part of the family, and they were taken care of, and they were loved, and all of that brutal stuff was just Northern abolitionist propaganda." And the teacher agreed with him, and they would have won if it had not been for another student in the class whose father was a professor here for many years, he's now retired, who got up and challenged both of them and said, "Why are you saying that? You know what she's saying is true. Why would you tell her that? Why would you say that's not true?" And the teacher at that point just changed the subject and moved on to something else. I remember in the other classes, because the other class I had where there were African Americans was my French class. And unfortunately, I had what I call a white liberal for a French teacher. I call her a liberal because she gave you a B for being black. I started suspecting that that was what she was doing, but one day we had tests in class, and where the questions were written up on the board, and you know, you turn your paper in. Well, all I put on my paper was French test and signed my name. All of that was in English. My paper came back with a B on it. Now, how did I get a B? And I didn't answer any of the questions. Unfortunately, at that point, I was so young and naive, I felt like, oh well, I got over without applying myself, so why say anything? But it was really a tremendous disservice, because what that meant was that I got credit for French 1 and 2 in high school. Went to college, I had to enroll in French 3. And when I walked into my French 3 class, first thing the teacher said was, you know, "No more English." And I was totally lost. So as a result of that, I ended up being what we call a fifth year senior. Had completed everything for graduation except French in 4 years, and so I had to stay a fifth year just trying to pass French. In the classes where I was the only black, I really felt like a fly in buttermilk. I would oftentimes be the first one to raise my hand, the last one to be called on. If I was called on, the entire class would stop, everybody would turn and stare at me, as you probably experienced as a student, even when you know the material, you know the answer, you can sometimes feel intimidated, especially if you're shy, and I am somewhat shy, to offer an answer in class. And so to have everybody stop and everybody staring down your throat, it's even more pressure. I had teachers who, when I would answer a question, would paraphrase it. But they would do it in such a way, you were left thinking, well, I thought that was what I said. I'm sure that's the right answer. But it was a way that the answer was paraphrased back or re-said by the teacher that always left you feeling like you were somehow incompetent. Something about your answer wasn't right. I can also remember passing in 8 papers and having them come back with C's on them and no correction marks, and going up and asking the teacher, "Could you explain to me what I've done wrong? There are no correction marks on here and I have a C." And being told, "Do you want to go to the office? You know, are you challenging my grading?" It's like, no, I come from a house where you're not allowed to bring home anything less than a B. And my mom's going to want an explanation. So I need to be able to explain to her what it is I got wrong so I can work on getting it better. And the teacher was like, "Look, either go to the office or take your seat." Well, Well, I knew not to go to the office because, again, I come from a household where teachers are like demigods, and anything they say, even if they're wrong, my mother always sided with the teacher. So there was, I felt no support. I can remember almost getting expelled because I didn't stand up for the school fight song, which was Dixie. You could sit down at my school that first year when they played the national anthem, and nobody would say anything. But if you didn't stand up for Dixie, that was grounds for expelling, for your expulsion. Also, when I was at North, the school mascot was the Confederate soldier and flag. And the students were always doing what they call a rebel yell. We were the rebels, the Northtown rebels. And it wasn't until my sister came through, which was about 5.5 years after I was there, that the students had become more militant. And they tore, we had a life, bigger than life size Confederate soldier and a flag on the wall in our gymnasium. Well, about 5.5 years after I was at North, the students tore that off the wall and built a bonfire with it out in the parking lot, which started a period of police being present at the school in full uniform for quite a while. I think the thing that was, I also remember at North, they like to give seniors an opportunity to practice marching. And so anytime we had assemblies or programs in the gym, the sophomores and the freshmen would go in, and, not the freshmen, we only had 10th, 11th, 12th grade. Sophomores and juniors would go in, and we would have sit in the top bleachers, leaving the bleachers closest to the floor for the seniors. And then the seniors, after everybody else was in, they played the school alma mater, and they would march into that. Well, I noticed the first year when there were only 6 black students in the senior class, if those 6 black students, one or all of them, happened to come up to get in line behind a white person, the person would run. So there was, you could sit and watch them marching into the gym, and you knew when the black students were coming, because there would be this gap, or they would come and then there would be a big gap behind them. But it was like a lot of the students didn't even want to be near them. But again, like I said, football players, athletes were treated like demigods. You would have thought they had been there since forever. You would see people socializing with them, laughing with them, but not other blacks. Same thing would happen when you go in the cafeteria. If you put your tray down at a table, it was suddenly like you had a sign, "I'm oozing with the AIDS virus, come near me, you'll die of AIDS," because you go to sit down and people at the table just jump up and run. And in adolescence, that can be very, very unsettling, because one of the things that marks the adolescent period of our life is sensitivity. An adolescent can get a tiny pimple on their face, and to them it looks like Mount Everest. Someone can walk by you and not speak, not because they're mad at you or they don't like you, their mind is just somewhere else, and as an adolescent you'll have a tendency to interpret it as, "Oh, what's wrong with me? Why don't they like me? What did I do wrong?" When none of those things are going on. So to have this type of treatment, and for me, it was hard because my mother went to great extent to shield us from whites that were not liberal, or not, I don't want to say liberal, whites who would not treat you like a child of God, whites who believed that everybody's equal, regardless of race, color, creed. So I was there for about 3 months because of what my mother had taught me and how she had shielded me from white, certain types of whites. And then watching the athletes be accepted, it took me 3 months to realize that people were running from me and treating me the way they were, not because I was ugly, but because I was black. Because I remember the first day I walked into my chemistry class, this girl had gotten to class before me and put her books down and ran to the bathroom. She came back from the bathroom and saw me now sitting behind her. This girl stopped dead in her tracks in the door, looked at me, and just let out this blood-curdling scream. You would have thought that I was Freddy from the nightmare movies or something, Friday the 13th. And the teacher did not reprimand her or anything. I mean, he went and like calmed her down, and he came over, picked up her books, and took them over to a desk on the other side of the room away from them. Of all the things that happened, the one that hurt me the most was a really trite one. After that year of waiting to participate in extracurricular activities, I went out to Letter Girl, and it just so happened that my best girlfriend's brother was on the football team, and there was a white letter girl that really had a crush on him. And so she tried to make friends with his sister, my girlfriend. And when we told her that we were going out to Letter Girl, she said, well, let me teach you our routines. You know, so, and she explained to us that the way they handled the selection was that you would come like on a Monday when they designated, and the letter girls would work all week teaching you their routines, and then on Friday everybody would come, you know, try out. Mm-hmm. Well, this chick had taught us the all the routines a whole week before the tryouts, before we went to start learning. So on the first day that we were there, the letter girls were working with us and stuff, and my girlfriend and I faked not knowing them for a while. Then we got tired of faking, so we just started doing them. And they were like, oh wow, look, they can't, oh, they already know. So they then sat down, and for the rest of the week, they would come and they would laugh and talk and spend time with each other while we taught the recruits the routines. So naturally, because we were teaching everybody else, we assumed, hey, you know, we'd have made it, you know. And so that Friday, just before I was getting ready to leave my house to go to the tryouts, another girlfriend of mine came by, and she wanted to go to the movies afterwards. So I told her, well, look, you know, I gotta go to this tryout, and then we'll go to the movies. So she went with me, and after everybody had tried out, one of the letter girls came over to my girlfriend that was going to the movies with me and said, Carol Ann, why don't you try out? Carol Ann was like, well, you know, I don't even know your routines. I wasn't thinking about letter girls, so I didn't come. I don't know any routines. She said, well, let me show you a step. So she showed her a step, and then she had her to try out. Well, that Monday, you know, me and Sibby, we couldn't wait to get to school. We knew we had made it. We almost didn't go look at the names on the list because we were sure our names were on there. But we decided, you know, just so we could lord it over the people that were standing there looking and being disappointed, to go and look. And we didn't make it, but my girlfriend Carol Ann did. And it wasn't until the first football game, when I'm sitting up in the stands looking out at the letter girls, I realized why she made it and Sibby and I didn't. My girlfriend Sibby is like three shades darker than me. We had to look for Carol Ann. Oh yeah, there she is. But if the two of us had been out there, you would have not had to go through any moving of the neck, head, body. We would have stood out. And it was very much like some of the things that you saw in like integration of the media. Mm-hmm. First anchor people, very light skinned, first black, Miss America. They always start with the ones that you have to like, is she black? Well, you know, she may be, only a southerner can tell, you know.
So your first high school, they were closing it down, and that's they had to move all the students out?
Well, the it wasn't so much that they needed to close it down or they were going to close it down. That's how Charlotte Mecklenburg decided to integrate schools. They decided to integrate at that point. And as a process of their integration plan, they closed black schools. And it was really interesting because a lot of the black schools, because of racism, they were newer than the white schools, because for a long time we didn't have any schools. Mm-hmm. So many of the white schools that they were using were much older and far more, far worse physical condition, and they would have been the more likely choices to close. But instead they closed our schools and bused us to them, because naturally they weren't going to come to us. Just like here in the town of Davison, Ada Jenkins was built long after Davison Elementary. But when they decided to, because the same year they closed the 10th grade at the high school, they also closed the second grade. I thought they had done this all over the county, but I found out a few years ago that only happened here in the north end of the county. Their way of beginning integration was to close those two grades. That didn't happen, you know, in Charlotte or in Huntersville. Well, not Huntersville, but Charlotte.
And did you ever like get a chance to participate in any activities or clubs in the other high
school? Band and glee club my senior year. They would not, well, by my senior year, I no longer had the academic average, but they didn't accept my membership in the National Honor Society, which I had made in the 10th grade. But again, I saw other students transferring in that were white. They were automatically accepted into the Honor Society, but we were told we had to wait a year. And naturally, after a year, we wouldn't have had the grade on average.
Mm-hmm. And so what was the main political thing going on at the time? Was that the media?
Well, the political thing that was going on is very interesting because we've now come full circle. I realized that because of Brown versus the Board of Education and the decision to desegregate schools, they had a choice. They really had a choice between desegregating the schools or desegregating the communities. And they decided to work with the schools as opposed to the community. Now we're coming back to this community-based school, which is going to take us, bring that issue back to the front again. Politically, otherwise, if you're talking about demonstrations and reactions, there were none.
Okay.
The demonstrations came with right after the Brown versus the Board of Education decision when I think it was 1957, that was in 1954. In 1957, they decided to integrate the first white schools, because I went in 1965, that was when I entered into this. But in 1957, Dorothy Counts, whose daughter graduated from here a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Nicole Scoggins, because Dorothy Counts has since married a Scoggins, so. But they decided to let her be the one student that was going to integrate one of the high schools, and I think she lasted 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because she experienced more of what you see in the tapes of the civil rights movement. The people name calling and throwing spitballs and stuff. There weren't any dogs. Charlotte was, North Carolina in general is a very subtle racist state. When I say subtle, they would much rather do something subtly than to be overt with their racism. And if your eyes are not open, if you're not really paying attention, you won't realize what's going on. So even I was very surprised to learn, because I wasn't here. I was already in college. When King died, there was no reaction here. Other cities, you know, there was anger, there was protest. The only thing that seemed to be going on in Davidson, and it's interesting that I was here maybe a week or so after it happened, was the barbershop here in Davidson. That got some like national publicity in terms of students protesting. But even that was typical North Carolina ass backwards racism, because according to the man that owned the barbershop, they made it look as though it was his decision as a black man not to cut black hair in a white barbershop, when he didn't make the law, they did. All he was doing was knowing that if he didn't enforce the law, he'd lose his customers, therefore he'd lose his business. It was nothing that he really had control over. Sure, he could make the decision, since it was his business, to let blacks in, but he knew what that was going to mean, because the law was there. He'd been breaking the law. But that's the closest I think they're watching any demonstrations around this area.
Were you happy with your choice? Well, did you really make the choice? The teachers gave you an option.
The teachers gave me an option, and the way I looked at it, I had looked forward all my life, because all my aunts and uncles graduated from that high school of when I would be a senior at Torrance Lytle. Okay. And so I was very disappointed and very hurt after that first year. But there was nowhere else I could go at that point. So anywhere was going to be a new school, even a black school.
Okay.
And so I finished North. And I can remember, again, one of the saddest times was graduation night. And the guy that was in my history class and I, we were standing waiting outside of the auditorium to march in. We were standing there talking to each other. And the white kids were all excited. A lot of them had their bathing suits and things under their robes and gowns. They had been looking forward to graduation night and all the parties and things, just as we had. But for them, it was a happy occasion. For us, it was like, thank you, Jesus, this shit is over and we can get out of here. There was none of the excitement that we had looked forward to as ninth graders and 10th graders in terms of thinking about your senior year. We were just ready to get the heck out of Dodge and we're glad to get out of there. Mm-hmm. As a result of my experience at North, I came away from there. My attitude toward whites, and I graduated in 1967, height of civil rights movement, was give me a gun, I killed as many white people as I can before they killed me. I mean, I really hated white people, and because of the way they treated me. And my father at that time wanted me to go, of all places, to an all-white, all-girls school. UNCG was Greensboro College at that time, and it was all-white, all-female. And it was like, look, man, you want me to go to college? You best let me go where I want to go. And so I ended up thinking that I'm getting as far away from that type of treatment as I could, and went to Howard in Washington, mm-hmm. and discovered that black people treat each other the same way, but based on the shade of black. Mm-hmm. So I went from North, where I was treated like crap because I was black, to Howard, where I was treated like crap by teachers and some students because I was the wrong shade of black. I wasn't light, bright, pretty, and white sitting on my head. So by the end of my freshman year, I hated black folks. So I'm like walking around, I hate black folks, I hate white people, ain't got time for foreigners because I grew up in Davidson and there weren't no foreigners, and just became very isolated and came back home that summer and took a job here at the college and met a white woman that went out of her way to be friends with me, and I ignored her for as long as I could, and then after I decided she was too dumb to give up, I decided, let me test this bitch, see if she for real. And I did. Mm-hmm. And she passed every test. And she made me stop and realize that I had met, if I really was honest, some very good white people. I met some really good black people. I met some really asinine black folk. And I met some really asinine white folk. Had nothing to do with skin color. You know, asses come in all colors. So it's not about judging somebody, as King would say, by their skin color, but by the content of the character. And that for me was a turning point in terms of how I dealt with human beings. I didn't stop seeing color, because I think that that's an oxymoron when people say that, but I did stop judging people by their color and started being open. If you treat me like a child of God, I don't care what race, sex, you know, lifestyle, whatever you are, I'll accept you.
How did your mom and dad take it when you first went? Were they happy?
Actually, I realized in retrospect, I didn't understand it at the time because I didn't really start looking at my parents as human beings until I was about 25. I mean, when I say human beings, they were always my parents. And parents have a way of being demigods, and you don't really watch them, observe them. Well, no, you don't really judge them the way you may other human beings. They were frightened. I didn't realize that at the time because, you know, you don't think your parents are scared of anything. And then as you get older and you get to know them, you realize they're human too. And yeah, they are scared of things. I realized they were scared. I also realized that I had to accept they couldn't help me, because I can remember coming home and sharing with my mom. I can remember coming home and sharing with my mom some of the things that I was experiencing as they were happening. And what she would say was, look, I didn't send you to school to be happy. I sent you to school to get an education. Now, you can deal with that if you want to, but your focus needs to be on getting your education. If somebody doesn't treat you right or they don't seem to like you, that's not important. That's not what you're there for. And that was not how she should have responded. But I realize now in retrospect, she was doing the best she could. Like she said, she didn't have Oprah back then, so she didn't know what to say. And I'm like, thank God for Oprah now, but I sure wish Oprah had been 30 years sooner than she was. Because that was, and that's pretty much been the story for me. I mean, it was like it started in school, But I found myself, after graduating from Howard, and it probably had to do with the field that I went into. My undergraduate degree is in psychology, and for the first 10 years after college, I was blessed to work in master level positions in psychology with only a bachelor's. You don't find a lot of black people in the field of psychology. And so I was always a fly in buttermilk. I was always the only black. And where was that going? And so I began to realize that not just my parents, but a lot of blacks, because they had not had the opportunities and exposure I had not figured out how to deal with white people, how to relate to them, how to live with them, how to work with them. I found myself repeatedly going to older blacks or blacks that I thought knew more than I did, trying to get some keys as to how do I deal in this situation, how do I handle this, and I've never been able to get it. The most recent being coming back here. I think I've been back here now since 1985, a little 15 years. And as a minister, trying to get support, help from, I belong to a Black Presbyterian Ministerial Association, which for a long time I was the only woman. I always find myself either being the only black or the only woman wherever I go. I don't know why I don't get to go to majority places, but at any rate, I got mad at them in trying to get help, and it took me about 5 or 6 years to realize that they weren't not helping me because they didn't want to or they didn't care. They didn't know either. In fact, they were more afraid of whites than I was. They had not had enough contact and interaction with them to realize, well, they're really no different. Everybody gets up in the morning, they put one leg in their pants, and then they put the other one in. We are all the same. And there's no reason for us to fear each other. And I've experienced that fear on both sides of the racial divide. I see the fear in whites in terms of white saying things like, well, I don't know if I'd would be welcome if I went to a black church. Of course you'd be welcome. You'd be a lot more welcome than I've been walking into your all-white churches. But, and then blacks who will hide their fear behind, oh, no, man, you know, I work with them all day. I won't be hanging out with them after work, which is really just an excuse of fear. It's like, I don't think I'll know what to say. I don't think I'll know how to act. Well, it doesn't matter. They don't think like that. We shouldn't either.
And what, in general, do you think desegregation accomplished?
You know, I know that people who were older adults then thought that that was the answer, that was one way we might get a fair shot at experiencing the American dream and getting our piece of the pie. If you want my honest opinion, I think integration was one of the worst things that could have been done to us. I think it would have been more loving, more compassionate if they just injected all of us with advanced AIDS and let us die. Because I see more negative repercussions for us than I feel positive strides. First of all, the playing field has never been leveled. When the Civil Rights Movement changed the laws, but it did nothing, and laws aren't supposed to, but nothing was done to change attitudes and hearts. So we're really not that much better off than we were before the Civil Rights Movement. A few blacks were able to advance, but even those few that were able to get through the door in advance, there was a glass ceiling for them. The majority, the masses of our people, nothing's changed for them. It's just like the Depression. I used to hear my grandparents talk about not knowing when the Depression was because they were so poor already. Depression, what was that? You know, it was just another day for them, but for people who had something, it was a real bad time. And for what the masses of black people have gained through segregation, I don't think it was worth it. Mm-hmm. I see our students being totally out of touch now with their own history and culture. I see the self-hatred that they've developed and don't even realize. It bothers me now that I hear so many black students who consider being intelligent and smart white, not thinking about what that implies. If that's white, then what's black? You know, because they're making a statement about what needs to be black if when you're acting, when you're using appropriate English, when you're using standard English, and when you're really seeking academic, striving academically for peers to consider that you're acting white. No, just acting like an intelligent human being. But things like that just bother me. So I think we've really lost more than we gained.
And you mentioned you had a sister that also went to North Carolina.
I have two sisters. One is 5.5 years younger than me, and one is 11. The one 5.5 went to North. In fact, she started integrating schools. She was in the second grade the year I was going to the 11th. So she has pretty much been in all white schools all of her life, totally out of touch with her culture, her heritage. And never had the opportunity. I see a lot of the problems she's having now as an adult as a reflection of that, because she has no self-esteem. In fact, she has a physical ailment now that in most medical circles is considered a victim's disease. People who feel victimized. And not only does she go to school with the predominantly white schools and colleges, but then she went into a very rich white environment to teach school and could never understand why suggestions she made were never accepted. I mean, she went through this, and like I see some black students here, things happen to them and they take it personally, because if you don't have someone correcting your viewpoint or giving you the real perspectives of what's going on, it's very easy to think that it's me. When, no, it's not you. It's not always you. Many times it's the system, the environment that you're in. So I think that I can definitely see where segregation really affected her. She didn't get to experience 10 years of being feeling loved, supported, being cared about, being touched, being seen. She spent most of her life invisible. And I see her in many ways going overboard to, quote, be seen. I don't have that need as greatly as she has it. My youngest sister didn't even get to finish school here because of what was going on. The middle school here in Huntersville, Alexander, before you go to North, the problems that they were having there between the races was so bad. And this is, like, right now it's very common to have police. In fact, schools have their own security system and their officers often wear uniforms. When I was coming along, that was not the case. So it was very unusual to have police at your school every day. And so by the time she was ready to go to Alexander, police were almost a permanent fixture there. And I used to call, well, not really until I came back here to start Love and Learning, I realized that Alexander was what I called a gatekeeper school. Until about the fourth year of Love of Learning, I didn't think Alexander offered anything in terms of math other than basic, advanced basic, or the general basic, and advanced basic math, because that's all I saw black kids' report cards. It wasn't until the chaplain was complaining about the difficulty his daughter was having with geometry. And I said, I thought your daughter was in middle school. And he said, she is. I said, you mean they have geometry at Alexander? He said, yeah, they've always had geometry at Alexander. I said, oh, I thought they just had basic and advanced basic math and pre-basic math. Because that's all I was seeing on black kids' report cards. And then I started realizing that's what they were being offered. And when you follow that type of math schedule in junior high school, there's no way you're going to be ready for college by the 12th grade. So rather than saying to you what my guidance counselor at North said to me when I walked in and asked him for a catalog to Howard, he said, Howard University? I never heard of it. But besides, you people don't need to go to college anyway. Now, I got a friend down at Howard and Johnson and Shaw. I can get you a job in housekeeping. You folks don't need to waste your time going to college. So rather than actually having to be ignorant enough to say that, you can more subtly do that by controlling the track that the child is in and the courses that they take, which is what they were doing at Alexander, besides the verbal harassment, which if you were to take a drive now around Davidson and Canisius, you would see a lot of black men in my age group and below who are just standing on the corner, the alcoholics going nowhere. I can't completely blame their situation on Alexander, but that's sure where it started. Many of those men never finished high school. They didn't have sense enough to realize a game that was being run on them, and they embraced being put out of school. If our schools had been left open, it's quite likely that instead of those men standing on the corner, they have businesses on the corner.
That's really interesting. I appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Just to talk to you, not to revisit unpleasant memories, but to be reminded, and that's why I do the program that I do, because it's important to me that we try to supplement what segregation has done. Mm-hmm. And that's why the emphasis of the program that I run here is on Black history and culture. And my mission statement makes it clear. I seek to help students realize who they are and whose they are, so as to enable and empower them to become successful and productive world citizens. If you don't know who you are and where you're going, or where you've come from, it's very difficult for you to know how to get where you're going to go anywhere.
Is there anything else that you...
Nothing other than it's very interesting to me that now I graduated, as I said, in 1967. Mm-hmm. Not much has changed in Charlotte, Mecklenburg in all those years. The racism is even more blatant now. I have students every year coming in at the beginning of the year. I work with secondary students, grades 9 through 12, and I get stories about how they walk into that class on the first day and the teacher will say, "Yes, may I help you?" And the student will look at their card and go, "Advanced chemistry, 06 prior. No, thank you." And the teacher will say, "Let me see your class card." And then the student will notice at the end of the class, other students coming in are not treated that way. Student looks around, "Oh, I'm the only Black person here." So I guess evidently they thought I was in the wrong place because it was an advanced chemistry class. Or students raising their hand in a class, "Yes, what do you want? What do you want? You're asking another question." Another child who's not of that race, "Yes, Mary, Tommy, do you have a question?" You know, that's late. So it's just a shame it hasn't changed.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.